It's Thursday, December 31st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, the new year dawns with terror concerns in large cities throughout the world. We look back at this year's blockbuster exhibit in New York on China's cultural influences.
The fact that there is this long tradition of imagining China in the West, sometimes it's more fantasy than reality, makes it clear that the West is still struggling to come to a deeper appreciation and understanding of what Chinese culture and what Chinese civilization is all about.
And we hear some New Year's resolutions. It's all ahead. Security is tight at New Year's celebrations in cities around the world as authorities confront threatened possible terror attacks against public celebrations. On high alert was Jakarta, Indonesia, where police uncovered plans for a terror attack on the capital during the festivities. I spoke with Magnus Ranstorp, who heads terrorism research at the Swedish National Defense College in Stockholm. Security is tight really throughout the world as the New Year celebrations are underway. And now in Russia, authorities there have decided to close Moscow's Red Square, which is a very popular place to mark the New Year. This seems to be very unusual. I don't recall that ever happening before.
No, it is very unusual. And of course, there has been several intelligence strands that have indicated that there is a real threat. There is a real threat to multiple countries. I think the last time I remember it was this way was in September of 2010, when there were multiple plots being reported, but nothing on this scale. It comes, of course, on the tail of the Paris attacks, the attack in Copenhagen, and also multiple plots that have been unearthed by the intelligence services. So that everyone is very much on, very nervous about what is going to happen tonight, that they have caught everything. And, of course, they're canceling. They're taking no risks. And in some countries, they're canceling the public fireworks display.
Yeah, certainly they're doing that in Brussels and also in Paris. Several people have been arrested in Brussels in connection or suspicion with the November attack in Paris. But does this indicate any sort of general plot, or could these be just separate groups, or it could just be people inspired by some of the recent attacks?
I think what you're seeing in Belgium is these are possibly inspired plots. You know, of course, the security services are trying to sort of locate people who may have come back from Syria. We know, of course, in the Paris attacks, at least six had been to Syria with IS. But if you look at the previous plans over the last 2 years, most of the terror planning or plotting have been by those being inspired by IS, thinking that they are part of this and taking their own action, not necessarily connected. So I think we are facing quite a difficult day today. Hopefully, I mean, the slightest thing may of course create a huge media storm, and of course it's very difficult for the authorities, given so many people out celebrating tonight, to be able to discern, you know, what is really happening once the fireworks display goes off. I think that, you know, the authorities would not take this action on any loose grounds. There are specific information in a number of different countries that seems to indicate this, but hopefully they have rolled up most of the networks or have located individuals who may be interested and done some preemptive arrests.
There has also been a lot of concern in Europe about, the movement of people, the sort of free movement of people. And in a way, this has been able to help potential terrorists. Are officials there cracking down more on people being able to, be transported from various countries?
Well, I mean, first of all, you also have the refugee issue. You should also sort of recognize the fact that there were two people who actually slipped in to Europe back from Syria into Europe by pretending to be, refugees. So I think that issue is of course at play. There are a lot of people on the move in general, but also more specifically, people who have been established here who are born and living and who may be inspired by IS, there has been a tendency for some of the networks to operate in one country and strike in another, particularly Belgium and France. You have that beltway, but also in Scandinavia, we have the same tendency that you may plot an attack in a different country. So it's difficult for the authorities to have everything under control, and particularly also since they have to hand over to other security agencies when these individuals are traveling or going from country to country. And of course, these networks are also using encrypted communications on social media, readily available encrypted apps to communicate, which also makes it difficult for the authorities to be able to follow this in real time. So it is a security nightmare for the authorities. For the most part, I think they have relatively good control over the established networks. We saw in Paris, for example, that there were individuals who had been already on the radar screen, the mastermind, of course, Abdou, and the different strands to this had been rolled up. So, but the difficulty is when you have individuals either by themselves or acting in very small groups, self-contained, that, you know, the authorities have to really be sure that they have made the right decision. And that's very difficult given the volume of people who have been down to Syria or even people who are inspired and wanting to do attacks in general.
Magnus Ranstorp, he heads terrorism research at the Swedish National Defense College in Stockholm. And this just in, the U.S. Justice Department says authorities have arrested a New York State resident accused of planning to kill civilians on New Year's Eve in the name of the Islamic State group. Well, let's see what people are saying about the New Year's Eve terror threats on social media. Michael Lippin is here with the latest. Michael, what's a response from the Belgian people?
Hi, Sarah. Well, you know, we've got just under 6 hours to go until Brussels marks the new year, and much of what the people there are saying is an expression of defiance against terrorists. If you go to the Belgian capital's official Facebook page for tourists, which is called Visit Brussels, they posted a message today saying, "Share your NYE pictures with the hashtag Brussels Fireworks, because even without fireworks, Brussels knows how to party." And then there's a link to the Visit Brussels website, which says the city's hotels, restaurants, bars, and nightclubs will be up and running to herald the new year. And it says Brussels will always remain synonymous with cheerfulness and celebrations on New Year's Eve.
Well, what are other people saying about the Brussels fireworks?
You can actually find a lot of people tweeting with the hashtag Brussels Fireworks. You know, it's a trending topic in Belgium right now. Some tweets actually come with images of fireworks. You know, perhaps that's a way for people to still enjoy the sights of a fireworks spectacle just in digital form. You even have pictures of cats watching fireworks. Now, some people might recall that when Belgian authorities put the city on a lockdown in November as they hunted suspected terrorists, they appealed to people not to disclose the movements of security forces on social media. So many people used the hashtag Brussels Lockdown to spread images of cats doing all kinds of crazy things, you know, perhaps in the hopes of throwing the terrorists off. So we're seeing some attempt to revive the cat theme today. But, you know, not everyone is pleased about the fireworks being canceled, as you can imagine. Some have expressed disappointment on Twitter, and I'll just read you one tweet from a user, Ashish. His handle is @OKAshish. And this user says, "Terrorists wanted to win by fear. Brussels fireworks canceled shows that we are giving up." Sarah?
All right. Thanks very much, Michael. That's Michael Lippin, and this is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
For those of us with a serious sweet tooth, it can be really difficult to resist treats like candy, cake, and cookies. Sugar. But diabetes, heart disease, and obesity, which are associated with eating sugary foods, are at or near record levels. So it's important not to overindulge on those sweet goodies. Scientists don't know all the specific physical drivers that trigger our sugar cravings, but new research has found a hormone that actually quashes the intake of some simple sugars. A group of scientists conducting studies on mice found that the mouse liver produces a sugar-suppressing hormone called fibroblast growth factor 21 in response to high levels of carbohydrates. Once in the bloodstream, the hormone tells the mouse brain to reduce its fondness for sweets. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we'll hear some New Year's resolutions. Council on Foreign Relations Senior Vice President James Lindsay writes that the European migration crisis was the top story of 2015, followed by the Islamic State's expansion beyond the Middle East to strike in Paris and California. He believes the international nuclear agreement with Iran ranks third, followed by the Greek debt crisis. Lindsay says approval of the Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Agreement is fifth, followed by Russia's intervention in Syria, an international climate change deal, China's currency devaluation, Beijing's island construction in the South China Sea, and Saudi intervention in Yemen, rounding out the year's top 10 events. Foreign Policy Associate Professor Jonathan Adelman of the University of Denver, speaking with International Edition's Victor Beatty, is in general agreement, selecting his top five events of 2015, ranking the rise of the Islamic State and international terrorism as his top pick.
What we saw in France, what we saw in the United States, what we've seen all over the world, this is terrifying and something we couldn't have imagined back at the end of the Cold War in 1991. I think secondly is the Middle East and the constantly changing battles that are going on. Whether we're talking about Syria, where 250,000 people have been slaughtered, we're talking about Iraq, we're talking about Libya, we're talking about Yemen. The whole Middle East is in an extremely dangerous and degrading situation. I think number three is something very different. I think that's the European Union. It's the inability of the European Union thus far to really react, not even as the great powers used to be, England, France, and Germany, but even in a significant way beyond limited sanctions. I think fourth is the emergence of Russia as a major power in the world. This is a great shock because as someone who teaches Russian, I can tell you back in the 1990s, people didn't pay any attention and the president said that they were nothing more than regional powers. So I think the role of Russia in the world and its confrontation with the United States is something very important. And I think fifthly is the United States. I think a huge story is the emergence of Donald Trump as the leader in the Republican Party, and a poll that came out just yesterday saying that Hillary Clinton was only 1 point ahead of him in a projected election. So I think those are at least five stories, all of which have major carryover into the coming year of 2016.
Well, let's talk about the new year and each of these stories briefly. How do you see them playing out?
The world is finally beginning to pay some attention. We just saw that in an Iraqi victory in Ramadi. And so I think that perhaps there is some hope. The French are certainly involved militarily. The English are militarily involved. Even the Germans are willing to provide some support. And I think the president has come to realize that this is not a JV team that we're dealing with, that these people are serious and a significant threat. So I'm mildly hopeful. Secondly, with regards to what's going on in the Middle East, we saw something very important. The Russians got involved. And we tend to ignore the fact that the Russians have serious military capability. They not only have what they carried over from 25 years ago, 1,900 nuclear weapons, but they have something else. They spend $80 billion a year on warfare. And I think they intend to tip the balance in Syria in favor of Bashar Assad. And so I think that's something that would be very important because it means Russia is back in the Middle East and becoming successful.
Jonathan Adelman says, barring a more vigorous U.S. foreign policy projection in 2016, he believes Russian President Vladimir Putin will dominate the headlines as Russia strengthens its presence in the Middle East. The Council on Foreign Relations, James Lindsay, says he expects surging fears of terrorism, chaos in the Middle East, tensions in Asia, the slowing Chinese economy, and a potentially raucous U.S. presidential campaign to be among the headline grabbers in the new year. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
This is International Edition. This year witnessed one of the most popular shows ever at New York City's Metropolitan Museum of Art. The Costume Institute's exhibit, China Through the Looking Glass, opened in May and was extended 3 weeks through Labor Day at the end of the summer. I spoke in September with Maxwell K. Hearn, Douglas Dillon Chairman of Asian Art at the Met.
The exhibit is actually one of the largest, if not the largest, museum exhibitions ever mounted by the museum, because it occupies something like 30,000 square feet. It's taken over virtually all of the Chinese galleries in the museum for the permanent collection, as well as the permanent galleries for the Costume Institute, and even one small space in the Egyptian wing, so that we are spread out across three floors. And so it's really a vast undertaking. So just from the point of view of scale alone, it is a very grand undertaking.
Yes, I had the privilege of visiting, and I don't recall I've ever been to a Met exhibit that was on three floors like that before.
We wanted to tie the show together. The concept behind the show is to present the inspiration that China has provided to Western designers across several centuries, beginning with chinoiserie in the 17th and 18th century and coming right down to the present. And we felt it would be very meaningful to place these costumes within the Chinese galleries to juxtapose works of art from the Chinese collections with these Western fashions, to really make the point that various ways of in which Western designers have taken, drawn inspiration from Chinese traditional art.
And it was very striking seeing not only the costumes, but the use of film and music. It really combined a number of media. It was really quite striking.
The premise of the exhibition, which was curated by Andrew Bolton from the Costume Institute, but which we were very happy to collaborate with him and bring the expertise of our Chinese specialists to bear on the show, was that China has been a source of inspiration, starting with export fabrics and blue and white ceramics, and then subsequently, as museum collections developed in the West, these collections became a source of inspiration. And finally, in the 30s and later, cinema was a very important source of giving people an impression about what Chinese life or Chinese fashion was all about. So it became a very significant part of the exhibition to choose films starting in the 1930s that portrayed China either by Western filmmakers or subsequently by Chinese filmmakers themselves.
And a prominent film in the exhibit is some of the sound and some of the film from The Last Emperor.
Yes, so the exhibition begins with a series of galleries that present three ages of Chinese culture. The Imperial Age, which is typified by the dragon robe of the Qing Dynasty emperors. The Republican Era, which is typified by the Qi Pao, which is a very slender, close-fitting dress for women. And finally, the Maoist Era, where the Mao suit became the one fashion that unified all of China and which in turn had its impact on Western designers. So those three ages are really set forth in the opening sections of the exhibition.
And why do you think this exhibit has been so successful? It was extended for 3 weeks.
I think that China is a subject that people are fascinated by. We recognize that China has become politically and economically a major force on the world stage today. but that there's still a need for us to understand its culture. And the fact that there is this long tradition of imagining China in the West, sometimes it's more fantasy than reality, makes it clear that the West is still struggling to come to a deeper appreciation and understanding of what Chinese culture and what Chinese civilization is all about. But the very fact that China is such a prominent part of the show, I think, has made it enormously popular, not to mention the fact that the dresses themselves are so sumptuous and beautiful. It's clear that people find that very easy to relate to.
That's Maxwell K. Hearn of New York's Metropolitan Museum of Art. Well, today, people are ushering in a brand new year, and recently here on the National Mall, locals and visitors alike shared with VOA some of their hopes and resolutions for 2016.
I hope that the world becomes a better place and my family becomes better too.
It just seems like everyone's so angry all the time, and we need to find peace again within ourselves.
Peace for all the world. My parents is back home in Afghanistan. I wish I can bring them here.
Having a healthy life.
Get better grades.
Travel more, work less. That's right.
Get healthy, so spend more time walking and spending more time with family.
Get better at karate.
Lose a little bit of weight, gain some more muscle, and, you know, become a better person.
Be healthy. Peace.
And that's our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks for joining us and have a happy new year.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States condemns the terrible attacks carried out by Boko Haram in Nigeria, December 25th to 28th, as well as other recent attacks in Cameroon, Chad, and Niger. In these attacks, Boko Haram killed dozens of innocent people who were targeted as they went about their daily lives, attending service at a mosque, shopping in a neighborhood market, or simply traveling down a road. We extend our deepest condolences to the families and loved ones of the victims, and we stand with the people of Nigeria and the region in the fight against Boko Haram. Boko Haram has no regard for human life. Its vicious attacks against the innocent, including women and children, and its use of children as human bombs prove its true nature as a purveyor of hate and terror. Although Boko Haram may be able to kill innocent people, it cannot succeed in imposing its will on the people of Nigeria and the other countries of the Lake Chad Basin. The people of this region are not cowed by Boko Haram. They continue to demonstrate remarkable resilience and unshaken resolve in living their lives as they work, take care of their families, and go about day-to-day living. The United States remains committed to helping Nigeria and its neighbors counter Boko Haram's senseless acts of terror. Despite much progress over the past year, due in large part to newly bolstered Nigerian and regional efforts, more work remains to ensure the people of Cameroon, Chad, Niger, and Nigeria can live in peace. The conflict has affected the lives of communities across the Lake Chad Basin region, with some 2.5 million internally displaced people and more than 170,000 Nigerian refugees forced to flee their homes. The United States provides advisors, intelligence, training, logistical support, and equipment to our African partners as they work to defeat Boko Haram. We also support those affected by Boko Haram's violence through ongoing humanitarian aid and victim support services. The United States will continue working with our partners in the region to identify new opportunities to support their efforts to stop Boko Haram's wanton violence and restore order in the Lake Chad Basin region.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage.